Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the July 12, 2016 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, everything is coming up, robots. We'll be talking with three gentlemen in the know about this these collaborative robots, leading-edge technology that will be on display this week at the open house at the Spectrum. Craig Tomita, West Coast Sales Manager of Universal Robots, will speak during the first portion of the show, then speaking together over the larger share of the program are Matthew Bush, co-founder and chief operating officer of High Robotics, and Burke Sorensen, vice president of engineering at MTEC. We'll be right back after a short station break, first with Craig Tomita. Welcome back to the show. My first guest is Craig Tomita, Western USA Area Sales Manager for Universal Robots, Inc. Craig Tomita has over 25 years of sales and managerial experience in robotics, automation, machine vision from companies including AIA, Cognex, Bosch, Rexroth, Mynaric, Adept Technology, and Festo. He joined Universal Robots a year ago as he saw collaborative robots as the next major leap in robotics. He's now responsible for managing the distributor sales channels of Universal Robots in the western part of the U.S. and Canada. He is a graduate of the University of Southern California with a Bachelor of Science degree in marketing. He comes to us today from San Francisco, where all is a buzz at the semiconductor conference at the George Moscone Center. I don't think we can hear the din, but we'll try. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Craig Tomita.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Well, a little history of Universal Robots, starting in 2003 in Odense, Denmark, famous as the birthplace of Hans Christian Andersen and one island away from the Danish mainland location of Lego toys. Craig, tell us what is meant by collaborative robots.
Well, collaborative robots are the newest development in industrial robots that has robots that have traditionally been dangerous and therefore having to reside behind guarding and caging to protect people from them. But collaborative robots are meant to be used alongside human workers. So they are force-sensing robots typically, and if they do, a person does get in the way of the robot moving, the robot immediately stops and the person is unharmed. And it opens a lot of very broad possibilities in manufacturing to have this type of robot available now. In our parlance, collaborative also means, in terms of Universal Robots, our robots are also very easy to program and use. And historically, that has been another barrier to entry for a lot of smaller and medium-sized manufacturers that didn't have programmers and electrical engineers and people that understand robot programming languages on staff to be able to make programmatic changes to their robots. But now all of a sudden they have, through Universal Robots, a robot that is meant to be used alongside human workers and is also easy to use.
Well, there's all kind of advertisements. I mean, really instructive videos that, of course, thank you for you making them available to me and elsewhere, that are demonstrating a really an impressive rate of return on the initial investment on these. So it's there's glowing reports you're all sending out there. So and we're going to give a chance to the people that are right there at the manufacturing sites, and they can talk about all that integration. And it's an amazing thing. So markets and expansion. So is there any kind of competition that Universal Robots has, or do you have some kind of specific corner on your market?
Well, Universal Robots is the market leader with an estimated 70% of the collaborative robot market. we were pretty much an upstart Danish company that pretty much usurped this market. And really, the more traditional industrial robot manufacturers are, for the most part, playing catch-up to us at this moment.
I know there are a number of firms, but so they're, in terms of comparability, I mean, are they, there's the speed, there's accuracy, there's strength, there's expense, there's simplicity in training. So are all of those things they're all trying to play catch-up in?
Yes, yes. We do have some proprietary intellectual property on this. That is helping us at this point, but we're pretty much first to market and making quite a lot of inroads.
Well, I've gotten to ask, I know that the Danish government was very supportive in getting the wind power technology up and running. That was the Danish government. I'm not sure. This is sort of a broadside here, and I apologize for that, Craig, but was the Danish government a part of getting Universal Robots launched?
You know, I don't know for a fact, but I do not believe so. But I can tell you that the country as a whole is very well aware of Universal Robots. I was
really?
In Copenhagen myself about 3 months ago, was trying to get directions to a restaurant, and then when they saw Universal Robots, this was a guy that I saw in a convenience store, some regular guy, Danish gentleman.
With
and
perfect
he knew
English
exactly
skills.
Who Universal Robots was.
Yeah. Okay, good. Wow, interesting. So let's talk then about Universal Robots. It was acquired by Teradyne, but Universal Robots is the name of the firm as you're getting settled in here in Orange County.
Yes, it is. Universal Robots USA Incorporated.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's tomorrow and beyond. Why is it that Universal Robots decided on our gin joint here, coming to Spectrum here in Irvine?
Well, we chose Irvine, California as a location because of its proximity to lots of customers and high technology, and also its proximity to the University of California, Irvine, and the potential for other employees and hiring people out of the engineering programs there.
So where are the other sites in the U.S.?
We are currently opening up an office in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Dallas, Texas, and our first office in the United States was in Easetalket, New York.
Okay, near where where IBM was?
Long Island somewhere, yes.
Okay. IBM is up there in Westchester County, if my economic development map is still intact here. So so then you've got some Universal Robot action going on in Costa Mesa and in Newport Beach. You want to talk about your clients that are already established with you?
Well, a lot of the videos, as you mentioned, are on YouTube. If you simply put in Universal Robots into the browser in YouTube, a plethora of our videos will come out. One that is in the immediate area is Glidewell Laboratories, and they are using our robots quite successfully in machine tending type applications over there. And Glidewell is in the dental industry. And we have another customer that is also in Irvine, 3D Infotech. And they are actually using what's called a ferro sensor on the end of our robots to do non-contact metrology, to actually take it apart, not contact it, but measure it, take all the dimensions off of it, and compare it to the actual CAD drawing of that part to see if there might be any variations in the actual part.
Oh my goodness.
Those are two examples of some actual Universal Robot applications in the local area.
Well, you also have that deluxe plumbing fixture there in Costa Mesa. The Feilrich, is that what they're called?
Sure.
There's Feilrich. They manufacture deluxe plumbing fixtures. So maybe that's on your ledger, but further down. Well, so UCI has a role in your expansion. So you have specific contacts, or you're hoping to shake some of that fruit out of the tree tomorrow with the open house and with forays you're going to be making once you're settling in?
Well, Universal Robots is doing quite well. We're virtually doubling our sales every year. And, you know, with the opening of our Irvine, California office, I can only foresee that we will need to tap into the local educated population to augment our team in the near future. But there are no specific plans at the moment, but I can see that happening in the next year or two.
Well, this is a public service announcement to all you applied tradespeople and engineering hopefuls. There's opportunity. It's not knocking. It's blaring, I must say, from what I've been newly exposed to. Well, I am so pleased that we were able to get a little chance to talk with you today, Craig Tomita, while you're at the conference, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Well, very good. We welcome. Look forward to having you there as well.
Well, my guest was Craig Tomita, Western USA Area Sales Manager for Universal Robots, and we'll be back with Matt Bush and with Burke Sorensen to talk about what's going on right there on the actual assembly line and in the home office of an interesting kind of enterprise. We'll be right back after a short station break. Welcome back to Ask Leader. That's Terry Riley, Rainbow and Curved Air. I searched all over for robot music. I also reviewed that creepy scene in Hal in 2001 when he wouldn't open the pod bay. And I got that out of the way because there's nothing creepy. These are headless little robots that we're going to talk about today with my next guest. Welcome back to Ask a Leader. My next guest, speaking of, are Matthew Bush and Burke Sorensen. Matt was a Universal Robot customer when he worked as Director of Operations at Scott Fetzer Electrical Group in Nashville, Tennessee. He was so enthralled about the new opportunities these collaborative robots offered, seizing on an entrepreneurial opportunity, that he left his job and co-founded with Rob Goldiez Hirebotics, where he is the Chief Operating Officer. Hirebotics niche, but likely an expanding market, is something of a temp agency for Universal Robots. Matt earned his mechanical engineering degree and MBA at the University of Florida, his master's in industrial technology from the University of Northern Iowa. My other guest for this larger share of the hour is Burke Sorensen, Vice President of Engineering at M-Tech Products and Industry California, right there in L.A., up the I-5 from us, in what may still be known as the most dense industrial zone in the United States. At M-Tech, they have a Universal Robot working in tandem with employees, dispensing glue and doorknobs, and it has a led to better quality and promoted employees to do more meaningful tasks. And we'll talk about what that means and that interplay in fair enough detail, I'm hoping. Burke Sorensen is responsible for product design and development, manufacturing engineering, automation for production, facility engineering and management at VAVE, with the uppercase VAVE, product improvement. Burke's also, when he was in high school, he aspired to be a tool and die guy, eventually realizing the value of continuing his education. He attended Rio Honda Community College and then completed his bachelor's science degree at California Polytechnic at Pomona. Prior to joining M-Tech, he worked at ITT General Controls, SV Dice Designers, D&D Sheet Metal Fabricators, and he comes to us today from industry, and Matthew Bush from Nashville. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
So we had just briefly on Craig Tomita. He's at the Semiconductor Conference there in San Francisco. And he gave us a little bit of an idea about what the collaborative robots are. And so you two can give us the real specifics of what it is to operate them. So I think everybody has an image of a full body robot or like many extensive appendages and that kind of a thing. Maybe you can just give us an idea. We can't run video on the radio. I do a lot of visual things on here, but you can sort of describe to us this kind of jointed device that gets all these amazing jobs done intelligently with its adapted, its advanced settings to each specific application.
Matthew, you want to start off?
Sure. If you think about the robots, I mean, they're basically just an arm. We even describe them as arms with, shoulder joints and elbow joints and wrist joints. The robots that we're dealing with from UR are all six-axis robots, which means we have 6 degrees of freedom, 6 different ways we can move them. And one of the things that, in my experience, having worked with other robots as well, that really sets them apart outside of the collaborative features is their range of motion. You know, these robots are able to do things that humans just can't do with our own appendages. For instance, I can't rotate my elbow 360 degrees, but the robot can actually rotate his elbow 360 degrees both directions without incurring any damage.
And that I saw that on a video, so that you really, it's a time savings and an ergonomic savings, and we can talk about those D's ahead. That don't work very well. But did you want to say something else to that, Burke?
Yes, I do. Matthew's right on that. And one thing else that I missed the first part of the program, but being a collaborative or being able to work right next to an operator without having cages blocking for safety, you can in our setup, the one setup that we have set up that we have going right now, and we have two more in the works. We actually have the robot, the UR5, actually dispensing glue into a brass stem, where the operator then grabs a glass knob and sets it into the stem. And so putting this into a production mode, and it's a two-part epoxy, so it's a very, very strong adhesive. The problem we ended up having at the beginning, we tried to have the UR5, the robot, to actually dispense the glue and then rotate around to grab the knob and apply it. And what we found was it was just too cumbersome. So integrating it with the operator, so as the glue is being dispensed, the robot in an area probably 1 foot by 2 foot, it's dispensing the glue, and the operator is in that general vicinity putting the knobs on. And what's good about that is that the knobs are of different shapes, and the best, I guess you say, holding device is a person's hand. But the part that is so crucial here is the dispensing of the right amount of glue.
Yes.
In the right spot. And that is very controllable. Our quality has gone up because of that. And the operator now is not getting tired pressing the glue gun, where he's really strong, very strong in the morning and less strong in the afternoon. And so this combination has allowed the operator to be like 2.5 times faster in the operation, and it's less laborious for him.
Or I guess it's kind of a strain to feel like you've got to be consistent. I mean, that's another kind of it's like the mental aspect to that. Well, I wanted to know, Burke, tell us how you, first what you manufacture, and then tell us how did M-Tech become aware of collaborative robots?
Yes. Well, M-Tech manufactures door lock hardware, residential door lock hardware, upper end, high end. Our components, we purchase all of our components offshore, but those are just screws, washers, nuts, and tangs and items, components that we design ourselves. Nothing is finished built. It is finished built in our factory and built to the order. So that's really where we put the American quality into it, if we see some sort of issue with finish. So that's the way we've addressed the offshoring that other companies have tried to do, but we're successfully doing it because we've kept control of the assembly part of it.
And so how did you find out about collaborative robots?
Well,
make this all happen for you guys.
Yeah, the collaborative robots, actually our the main corporation, the corporation that owns us, M-Tech Products, is a Swedish corporation.
Ah.
And they had ties to the Danish robot manufacturer, and so it came through our organization. And we were, this is great, a collaborative. That's a different way of working with robots. Let's look at this. And the UR robot is very easily programmed. I mean, it's almost like an ad I'm placing here, but it's easily programmed, and it's just very, very nice to work with.
Well, there you have it. We shill at will here on in this community radio. That's what's so great about this medium, I say. So I wanted to give then a chance for Matthew to talk about, actually, there's a lot of different models. Now, Burke mentioned the UR5, but there's the UR3 and the UR7, and there's a whole product line. So let's let Matthew now talk about how he is finding what it is that the Burkes out there need and which model it is, and how it's an interesting kind of a niche to be the temp for these robots.
Yes, I mean, we're working with manufacturers, like MTech, that are basically small to mid-sized guys, even though we've had interest from as big as companies like Nissan. And what we're looking at is we're helping them take and automate tasks that are today being done generally by temp employees, where they're having a hard time filling the position or it's a dirty, dangerous, or dull job. And we're using primarily UR robots because of their nature around the collaborative side. One thing that everybody has to keep in mind when you talk about collaborative robots is you still have to take in account what the robot is doing and the safety risks that are inherent with it, the equipment that it's running, things like that. So we do a lot of safety analysis as well, but we use the URs because they're relatively easy for us to deploy into most factories without having to build big cage systems or put in, big light curtain systems, things like that, that can give us safety requirements. But we'll work with the manufacturer to find jobs that are what we feel are win-wins for both of our companies. Obviously, we want to be as productive as possible as a temp worker. We want to be working in a good environment as far as, or working in a good way, I guess, so that the customers are happy with what we're doing because we're at-will workers just like a human. Our customers have the ability to fire us if we're not doing well. Where there's no long-term contract or something like that. So we're always looking for the win-win, something that helps us be able to do the job well and something that gets them some benefit, and then applying whatever robot that we need into the job. So we actually have a UR3 that's running an assembly cell doing something very similar, Burke, in that it's applying one of the jobs it does is apply silicone in the cover of an electronic assembly and then places the lid on that silicone. And one of the things that you find is extremely repeatable. Before they were having to clean these things up after the humans did it and spending more time actually cleaning the end product than they were doing assembling it. That's all gone away. When we put the bead in, it's the exact same bead every single time, and so that goes away. We've deployed UR5s doing different machine tending applications. We're currently working on a UR10 deployment that would be doing a pick-and-place operation.
Well, there are what you and the trade refer to as the D's. You're avoiding the dirty, the dumb, and the dangerous. You're talking about the consistency, but you're reducing the mundane labor, freeing the employer with tiresome and repetitive stress injuries. So maybe you can talk to that, Burke, in terms of managing the employee and how these dividends work for everybody.
Yeah, sure. And that's a good point. What we found with this particular operation was that the operators were getting fatigued, and this is with the applying the glue to these stems, these brass stems, and then setting the knobs in there. And after a while, it was so tedious that the operators would, in essence, get a little sloppy. And it was just a tough situation to deal with, and so it appeared that it would be a good application for the UR robot, which we had at that point known about and were looking for opportunities for it. Then once set up, the operator it appears that the robot is basically setting the pace, and the operator is making sure that he, and in some cases there's a lady doing it also, he is trying to stay ahead of it, but it's almost turned into a little bit of a game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's a little more entertainment to it, I guess. where he would get his portion of the work done, but he had enough time to open another box, prepare it, have it set off to the side, and so the pacing is quite good. And so I believe we have a much happier operator now working with the robot and working just the two of them working together than it was before. So,
but Burke, I hasten to say, though, the pace is set by the operator, first of all.
Well, actually, we have set the operator is setting the pace, and once we had that set up, the robot, the glue robot, is going through its program
right
at a certain pace that we saw as being the appropriate for him without tiring him out, and so it's going through its paces. So it's in a way setting the pace. Now, once he does that, he set it originally. Now he's beating it,
right,
and he's enjoying that part of it. Feels comfortable. It just seems like a much better, cleaner operation and a much happier operator.
So I want for both of you to talk about the sort of the interaction, how the workers, and I might mention even the unions, how are they reacting to this robotic setup?
Matthew, you want to?
Sure.
Because, Matthew,
you've
been at so many different workplaces.
You know, and not what we're doing today. Like when we were customers of UR, you know, and integrating our own robots, you know, when we first brought them in, there was a lot of wariness around, am I going to lose my job?
Right.
And what you quickly find is that even the employees that were very wary quickly adopted the robot as a team member. And one of the things that we've done and we continue to do is we very humanized the robot. So we would give them a name. And so, you know, two of the ones that are in, you know, a lot of the UR promotional material are Thelma and Louise, named after the movie characters, because the ladies that ran that line were 100% convinced that the robots were going to be the death of them. They were going to drive them off of a cliff. They wouldn't be able to do their job. You know, we had a robot that was basically doing a very ergonomic intensive job of clipping wires, about 16,000 wires a shift. And within a week or two, we gave them the option. We can pull the robots out, put the people back, or you can keep the robots. And not only did they unanimously vote to keep the robots, they also asked, all right, when are we getting the other robots that you promised? We want more of them now. And so part of it is, you know, we've never fired somebody because we brought a robot in any company that I've had that we've had robotics. We may, through attrition, decrease headcount, but we've never let somebody go because of a robot. And that's part of it. But the collaborative nature of UR, what really is beneficial is exactly what Burke was saying, which is, you know, what you find is that the employee and the robot work together better than they work apart. So the robot could do, we have a robot that's running a punch press, for instance, and it's a very similar thing in that the person is feeding it parts, the robot's processing the parts, and then giving them back to the person for final inspection packages. And what you find is that we're 30 or 40% faster than a human alone. We don't tire throughout the day. We are setting the pace. Our robot, actually, as soon as it runs out of material, it reaches up and starts waving its hand, trying to get somebody's attention. And so they don't like to see that happen. So even though the human ultimately is setting the pace by, if it doesn't feed the robot can't work, nobody likes to see the robot not working. And so they tend to put out more parts now than they did last year, which is humans. But at the same time, we know that the robot alone couldn't do what it's doing with the human partner.
For those of you who've just joined us, my guests are Matthew Bush, co-founder and the chief operating officer of Hirobotics, a cloud-connected temp agency of sorts for Universal Robots, and Burke Sorensen, vice president of engineering at MTech, a specialty hardware manufacturer in LA County. They appear on today's show in advance of tomorrow, if you're listening live, the July 13 open house for Universal Robots in Irvine. This is a Danish company. It's locating here. That's their first, their West Coast base. Here on listening, you're listening to Ask a Leader on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, streaming on the web where workers are working with their cobots, that is, around the world on the web at www.kuci.org. So we're talking about this interplay between worker and robot. So how is the training for the employee to work with this leading edge cobot? This is Burke?
This is Burke, yes. But before I answer that,
yes.
I wanted to comment also on something that Matthew said.
Please do.
And I completely agree with him on the way that the robot was accepted as normal, the same thing in with our people where they were hesitant of having a robot step in there. But once we have the robot going, they became happier about it, and they were very happy to work with it and comfortable with it. And what it did is it ended up freeing up their time, even though the operator now spends, instead of 10 hours a day working on this thing, he can actually do it in about 7 hours, and now he has the opportunity, and it's good for our management to move him into another department to learn even more.
And we'll get to that. We're going to talk about that 4x4 training.
Yes.
In
okay.
a bit.
Sorry.
It's coming. It's coming.
Okay. So anyway, we have also never let anybody go because of a robot. And it just doesn't make any sense because these are trained people who know what they're doing. And what it does is it allows you to enhance the product, whether you're able to do a better job in the inspection process or bring in, the more training for other departments, but we're always having a problem bringing in people. We do not have enough people, even though we've been adding robots.
So, Matt, I want to know how this works. That you do you bring yourself to different industrial settings to find out what where's your market for renting out these temp workers, these cobots? I mean, how do you reach out and expand your market?
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, we are, for all intents and purposes, we're a system integrator, no different than any other robotic system integrator in the country,
okay.
with one exception. We don't sell our solutions. We rent them out by the hour and actually bill by the second because we're collecting
really?
A lot of data back via the cloud.
Oh, wow.
So just like any other integrator, we're finding leads by either people reaching out to us. We get leads directly from Universal Robots as a preferred system integrator. We get leads from our regional sales team at our distributor that we work with, for instance, contacts that we know, people coming to our website and submitting a request for proposal. We get out there just like anybody else. The big difference is, we just rent our robots. We've cloud connected them so that our robots can actually talk to the cloud. They can talk to you. So as an operator, as a user, as an operations leader, you know, our robots are able to talk to you and give you messages and updates on what's happening. We give real-time data coming off the production floor as far as, you know, how many parts it's making, the cycle time, things like that. We're able to give all that information back to our users via a phone app. And so literally, I mean, we're interacting with the robots two-way with our phone app. You know, the customers, we have a customer in Miami that does assembly work. It's a little UR3 that's a table-mounted robot. It's got a couple of different jobs it can do. It can either do a silicone process or it can do a drill and solder process. And the way that customer actually interacts with his robot is picks up his phone, tells it what process he wants to do, scans the employee badge that's on the robot, which lets us know that he's standing beside the robot, and then the robot knows what to do next. And so it will switch operations or continue working on whatever it's doing until it's told to do something else.
Wow,
we're getting into companies the same way everybody else does.
So the time you're saving is, I fathom. It's incredible. It's seamless.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, you are, fortunately for us, you are easy to use, right? And as Burke was saying, which helps part of our project, or part of our process, which is we still have to program the robot.
Right.
We take over everything for our customers. So we do a full turnkey implementation just like a normal systems integrator would. So, you know, we've got a punch press operator up in Ohio. We integrate it into their punch press. We're actually running the press with the robot. It's got safety light curtains that were added so that the robot can protect any humans that are in the cell. From, you know, if a human sticks his hand in the punch press, the robot wouldn't know that. So we put safety light curtains on the press, for instance, so that the robot can't operate the press if a human's in the way. But other than that, I mean, it's just like a standard integration package that you would get from any other integrator.
Well, my brain trust gave me a terrific question I wouldn't know to ask otherwise. It's about the sensors. Mm-hmm. What kind of sensors do the Universal Robots use, and what sensors do you wish you have that you don't quite have yet?
from a sensor standpoint, I mean, the URs really, the only sensors they come with are the built-in torque sensors that give it the collaborative state. Outside of that, I mean, we're using standard industrial sensors like we would use for anything. Now, where we would like to see, and this is just from a pure industrial standpoint, at least myself, is easier way to connect sensors to the cloud for monitoring.
I see.
That's just, you know, that's for our personal need as far as what we do,
right,
as well as just having been an industrial manufacturing engineer, something there as well.
Okay. Well, now let's give Burke a chance. We're talking about at the site where there's a task A going on, and that part of the feature of the cobots is that you're alleviating the kind of tedium that otherwise employees would have to sustain. So that you're also, Burke, you're able to also deal with both the productivity and addressing tedium with your 4x4 training that you have at MTech. Can you talk to the audience about that?
Sure. We have just a little basis to the way our operation works is, as I said earlier on the program, we bring in components from offshore. So we have these components. When an order comes in from a customer, we then build the product to that order. Now, we build probably, we get about 1,400 orders a day. They're very small orders for 2, 3, 4, 7 locks. So it's very custom. Well, what happens then is because of the small order types, we have a very short lead time because we aren't spiked by large orders. So we probably have about a 1 to 1.5 hour backlog of orders.
That's such a marvel. Yeah.
Yes, it's very tight, and we've worked very hard to get it down that short a time. But what happens then is that you have little surges where there's more deadbolts coming in required. So we have the ability, we do shift labor from one department to another, and we do it, and the people are used to it, they like it, and also it's become an incentive because of the, if a person is trained to work in this department at that station and this department at that station. So we've put together this program we called our 4x4 program, where every station has at least 4 people in the factory that can work there, and each person has at least 4 stations that they can work at. So we strive for that, and we have many that are up to 10 stations and so forth. And so having the robot in there has freed up some of the, you know, freed up so the operators don't have to do these laborious tasks, and it's really integrated into it well, and I could see how Matt's company with
right.
the rental of the robots could be very advantageous to many companies who need something to move so quickly and take these tasks out of there. Because labor is, believe it or not, it's hard to get our factory laborers. It's hard to hire them. We are constantly at least 10 to 15 people below where we want to be. So we're spending a lot more on overtime, and labor is an issue. It really is hard to get people. So we're making it a little more inviting for them.
Matt, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, and the point you're making, Burke, about labor being hard is nationwide. You know, it's not a California phenomenon. I mean, we work in Ohio, we work in Florida, we work in Tennessee, we work up in Michigan, and labor is hard everywhere to hire right now. I mean, the National Association of Manufacturing last October said, as of last October, there were over 100,000 unfilled vacancies in manufacturing.
Wow.
Expecting that to grow to 2 million unfilled vacancies in the next 5 years. So, I mean, manufacturing faces a daunting challenge from a lot of different fronts on finding labor. So, I mean, that's where UR really does step in and help manufacturers begin to kind of close that gap between the available labor pool and the needs of the business.
Well, I just want to say, problem solved. If you two go right to the two political convention platform, a plank negotiations and talk about. There is an economic development tool right under our noses. We've got millions of jobs waiting. So jobs aren't leaving the country. They just aren't getting filled in this country. So
right.
So we do that. Right. Well, that's true. Well, I also wanted to give you a chance. We're talking about trimming waste and those kinds of things as waste in time and trimming sort of liabilities. But what about the waste stream in manufacturing? How do the cobots affect that?
Matthew, would you?
Yeah, so I mean, it depends on what you do, right? It depends on how you integrate the robot. But we've seen where, you know, one thing, the robots are very precise. They're going to do the same thing every time. So you're able to reduce the raw material that's coming in to the bare minimum that you need, because you're not worried about that the employee's placing it and they're going to put it on wrong. Or, you know, we're dispensing silicone. Well, every time that robot dispenses silicone, it dispenses precisely the same amount of silicone. So you're no longer having overages on the product that, while may not be going out as a waste, is still a waste on the inbound stream. You know, we have a machine, a robot that's sending a CNC machine. It's the same thing. I mean, we have the part variance very, very tight because the robot is able to very precisely place the part into the machine every single time. And so they were able to reduce their incoming raw material size to precisely what they needed and not have to worry about a human that's got kind of precise placement.
Well, there you go. Did you want to talk to that, Burke?
And it's very, very, very similar with the two-part epoxy that is applied. Is we're able to actually get, I think it's about 20 more stems glued up, so we're utilizing the glue better, and there's virtually no waste stream there, where when the operator is handling it, you know, if they go to the restroom, it's stopped. There is a, even though an operator is there working with the collaborative right now, there is a backup person who, when that person needs to go to the restroom, he just signals over and the other person comes over. So it doesn't really stop. And so you don't have it drying out or setting up and then having to toss. So there is definitely a waste stream reduction there.
So,
well, and,
yes, Matt.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, it also goes back to how products are engineered. So as you begin to bring in the robots and you begin to get the precision that they can give you, you can suddenly start tightening up engineering tolerances. You can change the way that you're designing things because the robot's going to do the job. And, you know, you may need to design it for the robot to do the job so that it's got certain features that the robot can integrate with. But at the same time, you know, you no longer need to get these wide variances. We did a two-part epoxy potting application with a robot where it's going to give you the exact same amount every single time. So the engineers were able to narrow the band of acceptable potting in the part. And now it also, they're going to perform the same way in the field. These are electronic ground fault circuit interrupter circuits. You know, they're going to perform the same way because now they have the exact same amount of potting in them, and so they're all going to dissipate heat in the same manner.
Wow. So, but it's not just about glue you're saying. I mean, there's parts that are, you know, the hard parts that you're also able to minimize waste on that. You have to,
sure,
when you toss out something, it's all the other parts of that. So it's
that's
a carbon footprint issue that I'm sort of got my little antenna extended out and seeing how that
works.
You're
absolutely right, Claudia. This is Burke. Sorry, I should have mentioned that our scrap rate from this operation has gone from, I believe it was about 3%, because each one is tested afterwards, 3% down to about 0.1%.
Wow.
And it's really gone way down. So that is a knob and brass stem, and yes, it is the definite carbon footprint reduction.
Yes, and Matthew, you're going to say something to that.
Yeah, we have a similar situation that we have a part that the robot's punching on a punch press that if the operator feeds it to him backwards, he could potentially produce scrap. And what was happening in the past was the operators were feeding them backwards into the press and just shipping them to the customer, not catching it.
Oh.
The robot now is actually on the leading edge using one of the sensors in the part chute system that he has to actually detect orientation of the part so that it knows whether it's positioned correctly or not. If it's turned around backwards, it just drops the part, gets another one, and goes back to work. and will notify the operator via the app that, hey, a part was loaded backwards.
Well, it doesn't have a head to give a glare.
So what's happened is they have no wrong parts going to the customer now. And so what was happening in the field was the customer was throwing those parts away and having to order more.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a savings everywhere. Well, I was going to say, without a head on this robot, they can't glare at the collaborative employee. you put that in
backwards. Oh, yeah, they can.
Oh, they can. Well, there was just one image, fleetingly, if you could give it to us, Burke, when we were preparing for the show. You talked about this kind of motion of the collaborative sort of movement between cobot and employee that you see on the floor.
Right. So back to this one particular operation. By the way, we have other designs, another machine in design right now. We're using two cobots, by the way. But in the one that we have the robot is reaching over to the left and applying glue, and to the left of the operator, applying glue, and the operator is then preparing other parts, and as it glues the two left stems, it then swings over to the right side, and so the operator's hands are right there and working with it, and they're not entangled, but they're working so close to each other. It's almost like a little bit of a ballet. I mean, it really is very nice. You see that, and you just go, boy, they've just got this thing figured out, and you think of them as two people there.
Well, I don't want to get into separation anxiety when Matthew has to pull out the bots and something, but you probably put in new ones or just different upscale the models, right, when you're changing it up for them.
Yeah, probably, yes. I imagine if the way Matthew's doing it, I imagine that maybe there people will buy them to replace them eventually, but... I'm interested. I'd like to talk to Matt after the show.
Okay. Well, I'll give you guys each other's numbers there.
Okay.
Yeah. And just to kind of hit on it lightly, I mean, so when we're putting temp robots in, we actually don't really refer to them as temps. And we're looking for full-time employment for our robots. We've got applications where we're planning on having them there for years.
Okay.
And we actually, especially on high-stress environments, we've got some jobs where the robots are running 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. You know, we actually, as part of our service, we replace the robots at about half to two-thirds of their life expectancy. Because we're collecting all this diagnostics data real-time off of them, when we begin to see issues are going to eventually start to happen, we'll go ahead and replace the robots as part of that and take those, we kind of jokingly refer to it as, we'll take those robots off the high stress and go make them greeters at Walmart. We're going to look for low-stress jobs for that robot where we're not stressing the joints, we're not stressing the hardware near as much as we were in the very high-speed or high payload capacity, many hours a day kind of jobs. It's funny to go into a plant where they've got a collaborative cell set up and the robot stops working. And now they've got to figure out, how did we do that job before? Because I don't remember what we did.
Oh, is that right?
And back to your training question earlier, at least in what we have done, both SFEG and with Hirobotics, we find that the training of the operators is actually pretty fast. In fact, our customer up in Ohio, they just use temps to feed the robot. And so they're able within about an hour to train up the temp on how to operate the robot, how to keep it fed with parts, how to handle it whenever something does go awry. Obviously, we're dealing with, on that part, it's very high precision, very tight tolerance part. And so we do have instances where if the part doesn't come in from the vendor in the right tolerance, the robot can crash, but they're taught very quickly how to clear the crash and how to get the cell back up and running very quickly. And so we find that, unlike a lot of traditional automation that I've worked with in my career, they're very, very fast to get back up and running with them and very fast to get trained on them.
Well, I just want one last quick question, and it's mainly for Matt, but maybe Burke has something. I want him to have say a little something in concluding here. But what is, Matt, the life expectancy of the UR3 or the UR5 or 7?
Well, they're rated from the factory at 30,000 hours.
Okay.
Which if you work, a general shift in the U.S. is 2,000 hours a shift per year. So you can kind of do the math.
Okay.
Somewhere between 8 and 12 years, depending on one shift or two shift operation.
Okay. And did you have anything to add that or otherwise?
Actually, at this point, no. I'm guessing that at the speed we're running ours, I'm guessing we're not taxing it very much. So, yeah, we haven't had long enough to wear one out yet.
Okay. Well, I've got to announce that we are going to have here at the Spectrum in Irvine, there will be the open house for the West Coast headquarters of Universal Robots. It's 101 Pacifica, and especially UCI School of Engineering affiliates. Mark your calendars now. That's tomorrow if you're listening live, July 13th. The open house is from 9 until 3, and you can RSVP to JYA at universal-robots.com. I want to thank my guest for the larger share of this hour. We had on Matthew Bush, co-founder and chief operating officer of Harbotics, and Burke Sorensen, vice president of engineering MTech. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you, Claudia.
It's been a real delight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was my wrap today. If you missed any portion of this or other shows, you're welcome to visit my website, askaleader.com. You're also welcome to tell me what you think of my programming or suggest some scintillating topics or guests by writing cshamba@kuci.org. That would be lovely. Next week, it's my pleasure to bring to you Ali Etraz about his debut novel entitled Native Believer. Talk with you next week. Thank you for listening, everyone. Oh,